All right, good evening. We're finishing off our semester, if that's the way to describe it. With apologies again for the interruptions. It was Mother Nature had a bit of a hand in what was going on this semester, but I think we covered quite a lot of ground. Sefer Yonah was very challenging, and Shir Hashirim, I hope, has sort of given a bit of a different light on what we've been doing. And today we're doing the craziest thing, is in one shiur covering Koheles. Koheles is something I actually studied for my master's in Jewish education, in Jewish studies, essentially. And I had a wonderful professor, Moshe Arend, Zichron Livracha. He was a professor in Bar-Ilan in Bible, married to an English woman. He was from France, I think, originally. Passed away in 2008. And he wrote a book together in the Chaim Leibowitz on didactics. Couldn't get past the first page. No idea what they were talking about, but it looked very erudite, I have to say that. Wonderful, wonderful man. I mean, the beauty of being in college in London, in that sort of limited scope, is that you got to meet academics that in America you won't, because they'll be in some place where you won't get to. But there's only one place in London they can come to, right? Even if they're in YU, you know, if you're downtown, they're uptown, even that was a problem to get hold of them. But very often the academics come to America. They'll be in Harvard, they'll be in somewhere in Midwest, you know, there'll be somewhere where they've got good Jewish studies departments, and WashU, I don't know where they'll be. So in London, I really got to know him, and he actually taught me Koheles. And, you know, I just want to share some of the nuances of the Sefer. Again, just to mention, it was my father's Yahrzeit, I want to dedicate this year in his memory. Mordechai ben Nechemia, Zichron Livrocha, and we're just coming up to the unveiling in London in about a month's time. I want to talk a little bit, really divide my remarks into sort of two or three areas. What we're not going to be able to do is look at the book of Koheles. That's something you do Sukkos. And we'll sort of try and give a bit of a connection to Sukkos if I don't remember to do so. Hopefully I'll be reminded. But what we're initially going to do, we're going to try and find out who Koheles was, right? Who exactly is Koheles? And then try and find out why the rabbis were so perplexed with the book of Koheles more than probably any other book in the Bible. We said they wanted to hide Shir Hashirim, Koheles even more so. Just going to give out these pages if you can just pass them around. So what we'll see is a very interesting collection of ideas. One second. One of them will only have one side, that bottom one. That's got to come back. You should have a double-sided sheet. What we're going to do, obviously, is a number of things. We're going to, again, find out who Koheles is, and we all know that, essentially, this is those are my originals. Yeah, that's the ones I've got to take. Have you got a copy? You got one. Good. We'll find out who he is. The name Koheles is very, very intriguing. What we'll do then, talk a little bit about the reasons why Chazal wanted to, I'm not going to use the word burn the book, but they wanted to hide the book, right? And then, maybe at the end, if we have time, just to look at the last pasuk. So at least we can do Chazak, Chazak, Menit Chazek, so at least we can say something about it. I've taken here initially a piece from... I've taken a piece from a sefer we haven't really used in our Bible study, but which is a wonderful series, some of you may have it, called the Da'at Mikra. Da'at Mikra, put out by Moshe Rav Kook, the modern commentary on Tanakh. The authors, one of them is called Amos Chacham, the famous, the reason why he's so well known in Israel, because he was, at the very young age, was the first one to win the Bible contest in Yom HaSmut in 1962, 63, whatever it was, yeah. Of this year, what's his name? It's an amazing thing. That's wonderful, and you know there are kids coming from all over the world. It's on Yom HaTzmaut. It's like the focus of the whole celebration of the day is this contest, and the kids know Tanakh. I mean, it blows your mind. In fact, they had a tie, I think, two years ago. You know, you saw two of them actually sort of going at it, you know, sort of quoting from Yeshayahu. Unbelievable. That's impressive. That's impressive. I hope it's the yeshiva. I suspect it might be more the background as well, but you never know. You never know. Tanakh was never one of the strong points of the black hat experience that I had, but, you know, Rabbi Lopium left at Savoy. He said, one of the things he said is that everyone should study one perek of Nach, not Tanakh, Nach, a week. He said, you've got to learn this. You've got to know it. Now, whether you study on your own or whether you study, with the Rosh Yeshiva, that, okay, but it's important. And this is... Very good. And in Israel, originally used to have a chapter a day being read. Just listening to the reading already gave you a bit of an insight into it, even if you didn't understand the whole thing. These are very wonderful programs. What I've got here on the side one, page one, is the Parish of Dart Mikra, Professor Zer Kavod. I think he's Zivron Nevrocha. If not, he's very old. I'm not sure. I tried to find out whether he's still alive. I've got a feeling he isn't. But he's written this very beautiful introduction. And the first question here on paragraph A is, Miu Koheles? Who is Koheles? So you're saying to me, obviously, Shlomo Melech. But in which case, why does he call himself Koheles? Why doesn't he say, the first Pasuk, Divrei Shlomo Ben David? He says, well, what does he say, the first Pasuk? You have the book, page 126, Divrei Koheles Ben David. So why is he insisting on calling himself Koheles? All right, so that's the basic question here. So do a little bit of this paragraph, and I'll tell you what he says. He says, "Lefi Ashkava Chazal, Koheles hu kinui l'Shlomo Melech." Koheles is like a nickname for Shlomo Melech. What's the connection? Hamakara Talmudi. When you look into the Gemara, Olai Hakadum Biyotei Bnei Nazer, the earliest brisa, which we actually said for Shershim as well, who habrisa muva. Sorry, but Masechet Baba Batra Daf Yudal Omar. There's a brisa there which says Bonemah Chizkiyah Mele Siato Kadvud. We already discussed this, right? Chizkiyah was the one who wrote Yishayo Mishle Shiashim VeKohela. In other words, as I explained, I think what happened was Shlomo left it Balpeh, and it was eventually written down. Who he says? Hagam Shlo Nemah Kam Beferish SheKohela Shlomo. It doesn't actually say explicitly. Kohelet is, in fact, Shlomo. Etzema ha-smachat Kohelet l'shia shirim asher l'shlomo. But the very fact the Gemara puts them together in one unit, right? And Mishle Shlomo, it refers to Mishle as well. Melamed she-sefer Kohelet hu shel Shlomo ha-melech ha-chacham. And it fits in very well into the whole description of what's going on in Kohelet, because it's all about words of wisdom. Okay, so that's the suggestion. And he wants to add from Seder Olam Rabbah, which I don't want to go through, because there's the whole order of when the books were written. We've already, I think, established that Shir Hashirim was when he was very young, and Mishle sort of in the middle of his days, and finally Kohelet towards the end of his days. Kohelet is the Sefer which gathers together, Kohelet, Hakel, right? Same word. It gathers together all of the points of wisdom which Shlomo wanted to share with the Jewish world. And we remember we said a few weeks ago, according to the Netziv, he argues very strongly that Shlomo would have said Kohelet on Sukkot. That's one of the connections to Sukkot. Why on Sukkot? Because Sukkot is an international holiday. Sukkot, that all the nations come to celebrate the holiday of Sukkot. There are various psukim, which we know from Sefer Yeshayo. And even in Israel today, Sukkot is a time when you see an enormous number of non-Jews coming to be in Israel for Sukkot. There was this group of Japanese, Makaya or something, what they were called. They were friends of Israel, they weren't Jewish. There would be a parade through Yerushalayim every year, and they would be part of the parade, coming specially on Sukkot to be in Israel for Sukkot. Sukkot was an international holiday. And therefore, the wisdom of Kohelet, which talks about more philosophical things about life in general, would be absolutely suitable to be said on Sukkot with such an international audience. Whereas Shir Hashirim, which is much more intimate, much more the connection between God and the Jewish people, was saved for Pesach. Okay, interestingly, Mishle was never read like that at all. Okay, and I suppose because Mishle is just so complicated to understand, hasn't even got a simple mashal. You know, every line of Mishle requires tremendous technical expertise. The Vilna Gaon is brilliant on Mishlei. That's probably his pièce de résistance, I would say, even more than on Shir HaShirim. The point that Professor Zech Kavod brings here in his commentary is the Rashi, who Rashi says Kohelet, who makil. What is Kohelet? Not just it's in a kihilah, it's said in a congregation of people, but Kohelet means to gather together. So what did Shlomo do? He gathered wisdom. All right, he would hear something from somebody, or he would read something, or he would be told something, and he registered it. Did he write it down? Nowadays we would write it down. Right? Sometimes you hear a Dvar Torah you want to write down. Sometimes you hear a speech, you hear a story. I like to collect stories. Okay, and therefore, you know, particularly Winston Churchill, he was very good at the anecdotes. His anecdotes are famous. And his one-liners are not bad as well. So whatever it was, you know, sometimes you just get that type of mind where you gather all of this information. That's what Shlomo did. So he called it Kohelet, not necessarily as a, saying it's not Shlomo, it's saying what Shlomo is doing. He is bringing, he is gathering, this is Rashi's Pshat, he is bringing together all of this wisdom into one book. Okay, so that's another suggestion of why it's called Kohelet, as I said, either because Kilot, it was said in public, as the Nativ wants to suggest, it was said on Sukkos, and that's the connection that we continue that tradition to this very day. Or there is the other suggestion that it's a collection of wisdom. The third suggestion, which is not a traditional suggestion, is that it's not Shlomo, and this we'll come back to this, it is, Kohelet is a gatherer of wisdom. There were people in the Jewish world it's not so far-fetched. There are people today. I'll give you an example. If you take a copy of the Chatam Sofer, Chasam Sofer on the Torah, you'll read it, you'll say to yourself, not so easy to understand. You take the same author, his Sheilot and Tshuvot, they are so crystal clear, it's beyond belief. You think to yourself, when you put the two books side by side, and I've tried this, that it's almost like two different people. Read the introduction of the comments on the Torah by Chasam Sofer, Moshe Sofer, 120, 130 years ago, 150 years ago, and you see that it was gathered by Talmidim, right? Students wrote it down. And when the students write down the Divrei Torah of the Rebbe, it doesn't come out the same. They've all got a different way of hearing it, all got a different way of explaining it, and it's not the words of the Rebbe. That's why the Igros Moshe is so incredible. It's his word from beginning to end. There's no B'Shem Omro there. Everything Moshe said, he wrote it down. Right? It's incredible sefer. And so many others for him. I struggled to get hold of a sefer of my Rosh Yeshiva in Gator. And it's on the Torah. And it's very... I'm not going to use the word disappointing. It's just that it's not what I expected it to be. Because again, he comes from the Briska Derech and everything. Very clear thinker. And the sefer is very difficult to read. It's not easy. And again, I looked in Akdom, and of course it's produced by his students, right? He obviously checked it over, made sure that it was correct in terms of nuance and whatever, but it's not the same as when the man wrote it himself. So what I'm suggesting is that Kohelet could very well be the collection of statements of wisdom by a group of collectors, okay, who put it all together into this sefer, and they are including the wisdom obviously of Shlomo, and maybe other things which are in fact going to challenge the wisdom of Shlomo. What's going on here, and this really leads us into the second point of what we're going to talk about, is the problem of contradictions. More than any other sefer in the Tanakh, sefer of Kohelet, the contradictions are just beyond belief. And again, you haven't got it on the page, but I'll just read it to you very quickly, the Gemara Shabbos, Lamed on the base. And the Gemara says very simply, it's a shocking thing that the Gemara says, Om Rabbi Yehuda Bereidu Rav Shmuel Bashilat Mishmei Derav Bikshu Chachamim Lignos Sefer Kohelet. The rabbis wanted to hide the book. They didn't want it to be for public consumption. Why? Bibnesha Devarav Sotrim Zedzed, that the words contradict. There are ideas in the book of Kohelet which are in fact contradictory. So then the Gemara said, Neymar Lo Gonzo, so why did they hide it? The answer is, Bibnesha Tchilato Divrei Torah V'sofo Divrei Torah. Alright, that the beginning and the end were Divrei Torah. So the beginning, the Gemara says, Ma Yitro L'Adam B'Cholam Yamotach Al HaShamesh, They say that's a Torah concept because he talks about Tachad HaShomesh, meaning now we're in a situation after the world has been created, referring possibly to Torah as something which was there before the world was created. All right, so there's a reference to Torah if you want to see it there. The end of the book is the quotation I have on the page here, on the side 2 of the page, which is Sof Davar Kol Yishma. If you turn over section C, it's Pasuk Yud Gimel, the second line, Sof Davar Kol Nishma, the end, everything can be heard. Et Elokim Yirad Mitzvotav Shemo Kizeh Kol Adam. Right, fear God and guard his mitzvah, because this really is what it's all about. This is the essence of living. So the rabbis say that because of those two psukim, the rest of the sefer is saved. It's a very strange concept, right? You've got essentially 12 chapters, the longest begin. It takes about 45 minutes if somebody lengthens it. And for two psukim, we're gonna save the book. So I think what the rabbis are basically going to say, what they are trying to say is that, you know, we've got to look at this as a book in context. This is what we're going to come to in due course, meaning that not only do we say that the beginning of the book has a solid foundation and the end of the book has a solid foundation, a solid Jewish message, but when you look at the book, you will find messages, even if they are conflicted, we will be able to deal with them. And of course the question will be how? How can we deal with it? If somebody is presenting a contradiction, you know, like a lawyer stands up and says so-and-so did it, and then 2 minutes later he says he didn't do it, right? The judge will turn around and say to the lawyer, what are you talking about? Are you defending or are you prosecuting? You know, make up your mind. So Shlomo here, if he is presenting a concept which seems to go one way and then goes the other way, what exactly is going on? I refer you to the Gemara Shabbos, page Lamed on the base, which has got a long sugya all about Kohelet. And in the end of the day, Gemara is sort of saying happily that it was not hidden, and we're very grateful for that. But what I want to do is to go back to the page in front of you. Before we get to this text, I just want to highlight some of the contradictions. If we're ready, let's look at the book that you have. If you have the Sefer Kohelet, the text, then let's look at some of the famous contradictions and see exactly what's going on. So, for instance, what does he say about kaas, about anger? Right? If you're with me, if you look at chapter 7, I'll tell you what page. It's chapter 7, page 142 in the book. It's the third line, Pasuk Gimel. Tov kaas mischok. Right? Tov kaas mischok. Anger is better than gaiety. Here the translation, of course, is grief. Kaas doesn't normally translate as grief. First is anger, kaas. So I don't know why they've translated like that. Ki bara panim yitav lev. To continue the translation, for through a sad countenance the heart is improved.
That's why they say grief.
Grief, right, because of sadness. But it really is referring to kaas. Alright, so he's giving a bit of a boost to there are certain situations where kaas seems to have a positive a connotation. Go down the page to verse 9. Right, where he says Pasuk Tet, where he says Al Tavahel Baruchacha Lichos, again translating, do not be hastily upset to get angry. Ki kas b'chek kesilim yonua, anger lies in the lap of fools. So anger is a very bad thing. So make up your mind. Pasuk Gimel told us that kas does have a certain anger does have a certain positive place, and then by verse 9. We're already condemning it. Kaas is a bad thing, right? If you're going to be angry, it's a foolish thing. It's not a good thing. Well, we talk nowadays about sort of anger issues, right? Anger management. So, you know, Shlomo Melech was a bit of a psychologist, I'm sure of that. There are a few other psukim about kaas, but let's just look at other contradictions. If you look at chapter 5, just to show you, there in fact, I think I saw Gabi Cohen, the writer that I've been talking about on Shir HaShir, he's also got wonderful essay, some which I've given you in front of you on Kohelet. I think he says there are over 20 contradictions in the Sefer. That's a lot. If there are one or two, fine, but there are a lot. I'm just giving you a few. Have a look at this one, where he talks about Simcha, the famous one. Not chapter 5, chapter 8, excuse me. Simcha, chapter 8, verse 8:15, which is on page 146. Have a look at this. V'shibachti ani et ha-simcha. I praise happiness. I praise enjoyment.
Ashein tov la'adam tachad ha-shemesh. Nothing better for you under the sun. Ki im le'chol v'lishtov v'lismo. Right? To eat, drink, and be happy. V'hu yuvenu ba'amolo yimei chayav ashen natan lo'likim tachad ha-shemesh. And basically, not a bad thing to have a bit of joy in your life. Of course, what happens next? You look back on chapter 2, verse 20. Okay, I just wrote these down randomly. And this is on page 130. And look what he says over there. Chapter 2, verse 20. He says, if I'm correct. No, it's not about Simcha. Just one second. So it must be verse 2. Hang on a second. Chapter 2, verse 2, which is the previous page, 128. And it says over there, verse 2, where he says, L'schok amarti meholo. Right? I wanted to say that of laughter, right, it is meholol. And he says in the translation, it is mad. Ula simcha mazo osa. And what does simcha really do for you? Okay, so previously we were shibachten yet a simcha, right, it's a good thing. Here, mazo osa, what does it do for you? Okay, again, not very complimentary towards simcha. Not the sort of guy you invite to the wedding, right? That seems to be the case over there. Chochma. Another example, just go picking at random. Chochma, chapter 6. I want to show you these because they're interesting. Chapter 6, verse 8. Chapter 6, verse 8, which says, Kima yotel chacham en akasil. Right? Why is the wise man better than the fool? Ma lo ani yodel aloch neged achayim. And what does the poor man know to go against life? In other words, basically, he's saying that wisdom, you know, with all the wisdom that you have, you're still a fool. Okay, or my mother used to say that sometimes people can be too smart. Okay, it's kind of dangerous. She always was worried about rabbis who were too smart. She always warned me about that, and I think she had a point. That's not so complimentary. But again, look at chapter 2, verse 13, okay, which is on page 130. And what does he say, Varayiti, top line, right, verse 13, Varayiti ani she'esh yitron l'chokhma. I see there is a benefit. There is an advantage for wisdom over foolishness. It's definitely lightened up. All right, so you know, make up your mind. On the one hand, you're telling me bad, and then you're telling me good. And this goes on and on. As I said, there's 20 contradictions. Give you one more example. Achil and Shtia. We already just saw that pasuk, chapter 5, verse 17, which is on page 138. Where, what does he say over here? Verse 17. Hine asher ra'iti, page 138 at the bottom. Hine asher ra'iti ani tov asher yafeh lechov v'lishtot. Right? It's good to eat and to drink. Right? The shmug is always fun. V'lirot tova b'chol ha'malo shem atachan ha'shamesh. Okay? And therefore, it's not a bad thing. But then he says, when he talks about it, chapter 7, verse 2, which is page 142, better to go to a house of mourning than to a party. So, you know, make up your mind. This man is very conflicted. Okay, so basically what we're going to be trying to deal with here, and this is just a selection, as I said, of over 20 contradictions. Ibn Ezra, I have a very, very great affinity to the Ibn Ezra on Kohelet, as I said at the beginning, because I had to study this from my master's. And there's a long Ibn Ezra, chapter 7, verse 3, where he goes to all of these contradictions and gives his resolution of at least 9 or 10 contradictions. And what I want to show you is there are essentially 5 approaches to explain the contradictions. 5 different approaches. Obviously, one approach is in the Gemara, which we'll refer to, but there are other Mefarshim who don't necessarily give the Gemara's approach, but answer the question in their own particular style. And this is on the page in front of you, section B. I don't know if everyone has the page. Mitch, I don't know if you have it. Just over here. Oh, you got that page. Oh, there you go. All right. There you go. So have a look at this. Section B. And we'll go through some of these approaches. Again, as I said, this is from Gabi Cohen, who, I have to correct myself, it wasn't a Hebrew U. He's a professor at Bar-Ilan. Someone, as I said, I've heard shiurim from him. Excellent, excellent teacher and very, very worth reading, always. Keeps tradition, but always is prepared to
I would use the word think out of the box. This is what we saw in Shir HaShirim, and he does the same thing on Kohelet. So again, our basic question, all of these contradictions, what did they do with them? So he says like this, section B. Gishot shonot la'avanat astirot. So there's different approaches to understand the contradictions. Mefarshei ha'mikra alchu bedrachim shonot. The commentaries have different ways. They liftot bayat astirot v'gila kohelet. Alright? So what do they say? This is the most controversial thing. As we said, that Kohelet means gathering of wisdom. Now, the tradition is that Shlomo gathered the wisdom and wrote it down, or at least recorded it in a book, which eventually got written down. But one suggestion is that it was a whole group of people that wrote it down. There were a group of people gathering wisdom, wise expressions, right, chokhmah, and writing them down. So of course, when you get a Jewish committee, you'll get, you know, at least two, if not three opinions, and we know that. So this is the ultimate committee situation where people are writing down things. So one person thought Chochmah is great, the other person thought Chochmah, bleh, waste of time, no better than being a fool. All right, Simcha, I love going to weddings. The other said, eh, he's a party poop, he doesn't want to go to weddings. So you know what it is, you know, you had different elements within it. And he says that's a gisha, that's an approach which we find. He actually says Ibn Ezra mentions it as one of the possibilities, but it's not the, how should we say, not the most accepted of traditions, that there would be different people bringing different opinions. In other words, what we have to do is live with the contradiction. We don't answer it, we live with it. Okay, and some people will say X, some people will say Y, and we have to respect that, you know, within the group that must have written all this down, there were differing points of view. Is that an answer that we're happy with and that I'm happy with? The answer is no. Very uncomfortable with that particular approach. Beseder. But again, Ibn Ezra doesn't sort of follow it through, but he mentions it. Look at number two on the left-hand side, top of the page. Achadim ro'im b'deot acherot shebesefet sitatot. He says another possibility is that this is just quotations. They're being quoted from different places. It's very similar to what we said in the first idea. So he's quoting from one source, a statement of wisdom about chokhmah, or about achila, about eating, or about kaas, about anger, and then he quotes from somewhere else, the opposite. Because he wants to, you know, sort of challenge the first opinion. If the first opinion is negative, or there is a negative opinion, he wants to bring from another source a positive opinion. Again, not very exciting.
That's very uncomfortable because
yeah.
That's a literary cop out.
Yeah, it is absolutely. And look what he says on the third line: Kafar Rabbi Avram ben Ezra, Ramaz Nefsharok Kazu. Again, Ibn Ezra says it. So I'm not sort of way out saying this stuff. It's coming from Ibn Ezra. He's suggesting it. Ibn Ezra was a very interesting... He's one of the guys on my list. I would have loved to have heard a shir from him. All right, there's a few people I think I would have found particularly challenging to listen to, but I think Ibn Ezra would have been fascinating. He also traveled around. He was very poor. He went to a lot of countries in Europe. Some say he's buried in England. Some don't even know where he's buried. I think most people say... I think he died in Italy, if I'm not mistaken. Fascinating history. And all of his commentary, the notes that he wrote for his shiurim, that's why they're so cryptic, that's why it's so difficult to understand, that's why it's so challenging. All right, Ibn Ezra is what you get landed with when you try and do a master's in Jewish studies. They throw Ibn Ezra at you. Translate Ibn Ezra, impossible. Yeah?
Why wouldn't he have the contradictions next to each other?
Yeah, they're not, again, it's a hodgepodge, and that's one of the problems with this particular approach. All that's going on here is that Gabi Kohn is bringing all of this for the purposes of the discussion, but he's not comfortable with these answers, I have to tell you. He's basically, so far, what has he said? He's either said that there's different people suggesting different ideas, no resolution to the contradictions, which clearly the Gemara does find resolution. So that can't necessarily be acceptable, certainly not in traditional terms. He's got also the second idea that it's just quotations and counter quotations, right? The similar idea of bringing these different quotes about wisdom and about simcha and about who knows dozens of other things, but not necessarily resolving the solution, all right? And he brings it also from Ibn Ezra. He brings from the Meiri, who says a similar thing, which is fascinating. So you know, you've got very mainstream rabbinic thought, going in this direction. Look at number three. Number three is very intriguing. My professor who taught me, Professor Aaron, I think liked number three. He was very comfortable with this, that he said it's all Shlomo, and Shlomo is debating with himself. He's deliberating, as we do in life. Yeah, midlife crisis. You know, well, I used to think that X was good. Now I know, from a bit more experience in life, that it's not so great. All right, I used to think that Simcha, I love to go to weddings. Then, of course, as soon as I started going to my doctor and he checked my cholesterol, I realized I shouldn't have eaten all that schmaltzering once upon a time, or whatever it was, you know, all the good things that I had as a kid, all the wonderful things that we don't eat now. And you know, life goes on. So it could very well be that that's Shlomo trying to come to terms with, you know, sort of his questions online, and having this internal struggle. I'll read it to you in his language here. It's number three on the left-hand side. If you see where I am, he's about halfway down the left-hand side. Yitachen, he says, it's possible. Lirob b'stirosh ha-megillah, head lihit labtuyot ha-chamurot shebehem ha-ya-kohelet natun. It expresses all the deliberations which Kohelet was subject to. Vashim rabim. Many commentaries, matzviim al metachim pnimiim. He had internal struggles. But ish sheket shayu menat chalko shel kohelet. They were the portion of Kohelet, his life. And when you read about Shlomo, we've learned the psukim about Shlomo, and particularly the end. I'm just teaching it again recently. The end of Shlomo's life, it fits into this. Eventually, Shlomo gives in to his wives. Remember, the apostle accused him of serving idols at that point. Chapter 11, Perek Yudalef, in Lachim Aleph. And at the time, we looked and we said, Baruch Shalom, Shlomo Mela, the smartest man who ever lived, serve idols. Didn't he see that this was, you know, there's nothing in it? How could he go and do that? And again, the answer is that for different circumstances or different reasons, Shlomo was put into some sort of internal struggle, not necessarily that he would accept idolatry, but there was an issue in the palace because of the wives who started having an influence on him. They affected his emotions, it says quite clearly there. And as a consequence, he started telling them how to do Avodah Zarah. And of course, by telling them how to do it, he's accused of doing it. He gave them the lesson 101, idolatry 101. It's quite unbelievable. So he says that is another possibility of trying to understand the contradictions of Kohelet. Right, that in fact it is this internal struggle that Shlomo is having with himself. Right, one hand I know that Kas has a certain quality, a plus side, then it has a minus. Simcha is obviously good here, but may not be so good in other situations. I don't know what to say about it. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to bring both opinions, and I'll leave it at that. As he says at the bottom here, Be'ikar, the last section over here, where it says two trains of thought. He had two different trains of thought. One was questioning, and the other one was looking at things maybe from a realistic point of view. This is what's going on in the Megillah. That he's got the... I'm not sure, but let's take a reality check. And when we do our reality check, I realize that this is good, this is not so good, Kas is not great, Simcha, you got it, you know, and everything that he says. So this idea of self-doubt, self-deliberation, is something, as I said, Professor Aaron, who was my teacher on Kohelet, he I think he liked that idea. He promoted that idea. And again, he said that, I don't remember now who he says in the name of, I know that Gabby Cohen here, I think, quotes different Mefarshim on this. And again, it's interesting. It's interesting, we would never maybe consider that particular option. If you turn over, and you'll see the problem, what we've said so far, which is that we haven't actually resolved any of the contradictions, we've got to live with them. That's really what we're saying. If you turn over on page 2, on the left-hand on the right-hand side of the top, Hamushutav l'shlosha deot, connecting all of these three approaches, She'evenu ad kohu, she'kulam manichot et kiyuman, she'lastirot, the contradictions survive. Now, again, I don't know how you feel, but, you know, sometimes you're almost prepared to live with the contradiction. I don't understand. And that admission, I don't understand, is sometimes not a bad thing. Okay, it's very difficult. I know in certain professions, people want to be considered the ultimate authority about everything. But, you know what, there's got to be a point where any of us will have to turn around and say, I just do not understand. And again, he says the only problem with this approach, which is a very humbling approach, is that it doesn't answer the contradictions. You know, what do you do with these contradictions if you want to resolve them? So look at number four. He says, "Ashita mekubelet arov chachameinu zal." What is the opinion of Chazal when it comes to the contradictions? Ba'alei targum v'chelik minfarshei yimei ha'beinayim v'zman ha'chadash, and many writers on Kohelet of the modern age, the modern period, they all seem to agree. Hu lirot kol rayon amuva b'megilat Kohelet kihit yachasut nosei musuyam. Everything that he's talking about is referring to a specific topic. Kasher mishtaneh nosei, when the circumstances change, mishtaneh mimele gam et yachasut of the way we relate to it also changes. So basically, what he's going to say here in 4, and he says almost the same thing in 5, in his fifth approach, is that it depends on the item, it depends on the situation, or as he says in section 5, it depends on the context. If we look at the psukim, we will see, and this to me is a much more intellectually satisfying approach, is to look at the context of when does he say ka'as is bad, and when does he say ka'as is good. When does he say simcha is bad? When does he say simcha is good? And if you are prepared to sort of do a bit more research without just presenting the contradiction, but trying to answer, you know, this is like classic Gemara approach, right? Sveidinim, you know, that everything has a different place and a different definition, then we're a much safer territory. Let me show you section 5 and see what he does with some of these contradictions. Section 5 at the bottom, look at the context. The third line. If you look at the context, nitan lavchin gam b'derech pashtanit, it almost becomes obvious. Bein shnei sugei simcha, we're talking about two different types of joy. What are they? Simcha achat, oto kehelet sholel, the one that Kehelet says is terrible. What is that? He's simcha sholelut, when people get drunk. Okay, this is unfortunately the cause of so much problem of social problems and everything else. That's what he's saying. That sort of simcha, which is based on drinking and general frivolity, not so good, he says. In fact, quite bad. And that's the pasuk bet we saw, chapter 2, verse 2. Why is it bad? Ki simcha zu makbila l'schok. L'schok amati me'olam. Right? It's like schok, which is also making fun, which is also not amavata hololut. Also a sense of wild abandoned type of behavior. Keneged ze, and he said, in contrast, hu mechayev et ha-simcha amitit. He realizes that simcha does have a proper place. Zod shelo notzra ketotza'ah mishikrut, not because a person gets drunk and becomes very happy. Elo nevad min ha-hakara, but it's true simcha. She'ochein ha-simcha ba'amel, that you feel the joy of your work, of your effort. Right, matat elokim, it's a gift of God. Benigud leksilim, and there you distinguish between the person who has simcha to the fool, who anim shachim lechay hololut, who spends his whole time wasting his time with all of these pursuits. Bebeit hamishten, and as you would say in England, in the pub, in the bar, or wherever he goes. Okay, modanim chachamim gam b'shad simchatam lemahut hachayim. So he says basically the wise person realizes the limitations and behaves accordingly. So again, it makes perfect sense. Simcha in one place is good. Simcha when it's hololud, when it's just out of place, is not so good. And of course, this becomes the big challenge on Purim, when the lines get blurred. Maybe that's part of the blur of this, the Haman and Mordechai problem, right? You blur simcha as well, because you end up having simchat hololud. And if you've never been in yeshiva on Purim, you don't know what I mean. But it does get really out of hand. Gets really quite out of control. And the whole idea over there, of course, is... I don't know, I have this memory of the very one boy in my yeshiva. This is 40 years ago, but I have a picture of him in my mind. On Purim with a Hawaiian shirt, which was a Hasidisha boy, so he had payas, this guy. Put on this Hawaiian outfit, and he was sitting in the Rosh Yeshiva's seat, right, on Purim, and behaving in a rather inappropriate sort of shouting, whatever he was doing. I'm not quite sure what it was. It was during Mincha time. People eventually had to lift him off and take him away. You know, so it was like the men in white coats. I mean, it was that sort of situation. It was unforgettable.
You and remember
Sorry?
You remember the Rosh Hashiva shir? No, but that you remember.
That I remember. I do remember the Rosh Hashiva shir, but I remember that that was also another experience, which he was a good Lithuanian. All right. The story goes. If I haven't told this story, I'll tell it very quickly. He used to get you to say shalom. I'm sure Rav Soloveitchik did the same thing. You sat in an order in the room, so you knew that your turn would come on Wednesday in 2 weeks' time, right? So you prepared because you knew it was coming. And when you said shir, you know, he really grilled you. He wanted to make sure you knew it. So the day before the Wednesday, on the Tuesday, Cohen sitting in that seat, tomorrow's seat, decided he can't handle this. He was having conniptions. So what did Cohen do? He moved to the back of the room. So the Rosh Yeshiva comes in and looks, and he sees Cohen has moved to the back of the room. So in his typical Lithuanian, very bland sense of humor, he says, Cohen, shuni mokom, he says, shinui mazel. Yeah, you change your place, bad luck. You're going to say the shir. Never got out of it. Cohen was devastated for weeks afterwards. But, you know, you just couldn't do that. You couldn't fool the Rosh Yeshiva. It was funny. Very typical Rosh Yeshiva story. The bottom line of the contradictions here, which I think is so interesting, is, and I think this is really the bottom line, is that whichever way you want to understand this, whether this is Shlomo's internal struggle, or whether this is in fact contradictions that we can answer, and we've got a whole bunch of things to say over here, where we talk about anger, we've just spoken about Simcha, and there's answers to all of these things. The Gemara in Shabbos does try to give answers to it as well. Then, whichever way you understand it, the book was put into the canon of the Bible in the end. So even with those contradictions, Chazal seem to have come to peace with what has happened. They made their peace with the contradictions. And whichever way you understand this, whether they are happy to... the Gemara itself sort of suggests answers, different circumstances of Simcha. Not necessarily, the Gemara doesn't necessarily look at the context of the verse. The Gemara just is looking about different situations, which may not necessarily be connected to the Psukim. But it doesn't matter. The fact that the Gemara tries to answer it in that way, that Simcha in a certain situation is good, Simcha of Hololut is bad, whichever way you want to explain it, it doesn't matter. The fact is the Gemara wants to resolve this, because the Gemara is very concerned that the book should not be seen as something within itself which is contradictory. But I think what we said before is that that would not harm Shlomo's reputation to say he was conflicted. And if you look at the story of Shlomo, I think he really was conflicted, yeah. Yeah.
We're talking about Kohelis. We're talking about Shlomo Melech, who was the wisest of all men.
Right.
If you're going to classify contradictions in Kohelis in a negative sense, then you're missing the whole point.
You're missing the point, and I think you're absolutely right.
You can't say throughout the book because it's badly written that he doesn't know what he's talking about.
No.
You can't start with a negative.
Correct. Correct.
We need a clarification as to why this was said.
Correct.
In that way.
Correct.
Because I'm sure
he knew what he wanted to figure it out. Correct. And therefore, I think living with the fact that maybe the third approach, which is that Shlomo had these dilemmas which he wanted to present to the world, is a very satisfying approach and a very realistic approach. What the Gemara is doing, or what the commentaries in the fourth and fifth suggestion over here, are seeing Kohelet as a piece of Gemara. Right? If Rava says one thing, then Rava contradiction, so you've got to answer. Stirim and obey, so you've got to answer what's going on. Right? The Hosea. But here, we're not talking about a piece of Gemara, we're talking about a book of wisdom. And therefore, the different approaches which we've seen over here, in terms of trying to deal with the contradictions, some will say to you, in the book of wisdom is not like a Gemara, that you may have to live with those two presentations of Ka'as and Simcha, or whatever, and work out in your own mind what Shlomo was the message that he was giving, which is exactly what you were saying, by presenting them in two different ways. And that, I think, is fabulous. I really think it's great. Yeah?
I think they're missing a major question and a major idea of all the other Sifrei Yakodesh are giving us either a Nebuah,
yeah,
either a Nes, like Esther,
yeah,
or a Nes, either a message of Shuva, like Yonah.
Yeah. What's the message?
What is it giving? So they're saying, to the greatness of Shlomo, why put it into the canon?
Yeah.
Only because it has Sof Devar.
Because of that.
The original answer.
Yeah.
Because it has that, what merits it
That saves it. That saves it. But
they really had no. What's the message to the Doros?
Yeah, yeah. But again, in our world today, when we are dealing with so much in terms of psychological approach, I in fact find the whole book so inspiring that the honesty, right? This is what I think I'm getting at here. The honesty that Shlomo can present two points of view. That's great. You know, what do you do as a teacher when you want to get an essay out of kids? Compare and contrast. Okay, and then you realize if they can do that between the two opinions that you've been talking about, Rashi and Tosafos or whatever it may be, wow, then you've really got the point across. They're not saying that they're both saying the same thing, but they understand Rashi says because of this, Tosafos says because of that. That's a fantastic limud that comes out of a Gemara for the person, you know, to develop the person's psychological powers.
But then again, you pointed out maybe 20 or 21 contradictions.
Yeah.
90% of the Sefer is not contradiction.
That's true.
Like ace the snow, ace la ho. I mean, that's
correct.
Valuable stuff without yeah. contradiction.
Yeah, yeah. And clearly that's another basis why Chazal kept it in. I imagine the voting was very close. It's like the beginning of that scene in the Frisco Kid. You know, that Levin are against, that the Rosh Hashiva said, this is my opinion, and everybody else follows suit. You just don't know. We don't know what the discussion was when they decided to include it in the Bible. I just want to show you the last pasuk over here, because, you know, at least we'll learn one pasuk. The commentary at the end, which is wonderful. What this, again, is taken from Da'at Mikra, and it's right at the bottom here, in the commentary, which is actually a quote from where is it coming from? From Gemara, I think. Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Gedolahi. Just a second. Gedolahi Ayira, Sheshnei Sfarim Shekatav Shlomo, Lo Chataman Ela Biyira. In the end of the day, and this is a side of Shlomo that we're not really used to, that Shlomo was someone who very much brought to the attention of the Jewish world the idea of fearing God. Now again, you look at Shlomo's lifestyle, and you're questioned about that. He didn't actually show a lot of Yira during his life, right? Maybe not in the way that we it's presented to us. But by the end, he understood that everything that he did, the 1,000 wives and the horses and the money and everything else, it all boiled down really to one thing. Do you fear God? Are you a God-fearing person or not? Should you be a God-fearing person if you're very wealthy? The answer is yes. Should you be a God-fearing person if you're very poor? The answer is yes. The answer is because that is really what it's about. And he says, and interesting, where is Yira at the end of another book of Shlomo? B'sefer Mishlei, we all know it. Sheka Achem ve'evel ha'yofi, Isha Yirat Hashem yititalo. We say it Friday night. That is saying that the greatest thing is Yirat Hashem. Finishes on the message of fear. And here also, when it says, Sof Tavar, Kol Nishmah, Litkim Yira, fear God. And this is the message, and I argue at the end that Shlomo, who wanted, this finishes off something we spoke about a long time ago. We asked the question, Shlomo was determined not to be King David number two. He couldn't be King David number two. He couldn't follow David HaMelech, because David served God from such a high standard. Shlomo was trying to elevate from the ground upwards. In the end, what happens, Shlomo realizes, Yecholiyot, you know, that my father's derech really was the way to go. Even though I didn't do it my whole lifetime, at the end of the day, Yirat Hashem, it's about bringing God down, essentially going for that high level of year of connection to God, bringing it into your life, and working on that basis. I know Shlomo says, I tried so hard to bring the world up to some sort of level of spirituality. You know what? By the time he gets to the end of Kohelet, maybe he realizes, Zelo Adera. Certainly not for him. It wasn't the right way. What we've said today, I hope, made a bit of sense. I know it was only one Shiur on Kohelet, but it's already established, number one, who he was, the different interpretations of the name, number two, the contradictions, we saw those, various ways of trying to answer the contradictions, and in the end, when the Gemara says the end posuk is one of the reasons the book was kept in, I think maybe there is an extra agenda here of Shlomo and his relationship to God as expressed in his lifetime and as presented in Kohelet, which I still believe is very much the end of his lifetime. So I think we put all that together. I think that's a nice conclusion to what we've been saying. Thank you very much. Thank you.